From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo and other state politicians are wary of holding a constitutional convention. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on Congresswoman Stefanik and Congressman Faso upset over President Trump's relationship with the media. And we'll look at how ride-hailing services have been doing upstate in New York's Hudson Valley. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Add New York Governor Cuomo's name to the list of state politicians wary of holding a constitutional convention. Voters get to decide this November whether New York should hold the event. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo initially supported holding a constitutional convention. He wanted to reform the delegate selection process, and he even included $1 million in a past budget to lay the groundwork for the event. But the legislature failed to approve the money, and this year the governor did not include the plan in his spending proposal. Cuomo now says he has concerns about backing a convention without ensuring that the delegates are independent and not simply controlled by the state legislature.
I said the convention is a good idea and it's a way to get reform, but you have to elect delegates who are not currently elected officials.
But since Cuomo and lawmakers failed to change the delegate selection process, voters would have to say yes or no to a convention before knowing exactly how the delegates would be chosen. The governor denies that he did not work hard enough to win changes.
We've talked about it, but nothing has come of it. There's no desire to do it.
Cuomo stopped short, though, of saying he's against holding the constitutional convention. The governor's not the only one with reservations. Over 100 groups, ranging from unions, environmental organizations, to pro-gun groups and the state's conservative party, all fear that some rights already in the state constitution might be taken away. They range from forever wild provisions for the Adirondack Park, workers' rights, and the rights to own weapons. Several government reform groups back holding the event, though. They say it's worth the risk to get real change that can't be achieved through more traditional means. Bill Samuels, with Effective New York, says an overhaul of the state's constitution is decades overdue.
Our constitution in New York was primarily written in 1894 and 1938. Now, in 1894 was the last time we had an educational amendment. We're still running under it. It's the last time we had an environmental amendment. That convention had not one black person in it and one woman.
Voters approved the constitutional changes made in the 1938 convention, the last time the event was successful. In 1967, a convention was held, but voters ultimately rejected the proposed revisions. Samuel says while opponents have the monetary advantage to run a campaign to discourage a yes vote, his group hopes to make headway using social media as a back channel to win support. He says no one should be afraid of holding a convention.
To run scared is the last thing you should do. If a bully threatens you, you got to kick him right back and right away. And it's the wrong stance for us New Yorkers. We have to be courageous and have a goal of having the best legislature in the country and a great New York.
A recent poll found New Yorkers support the concept but say they haven't heard much about it. Samuel said the state constitution could potentially be amended to improve voter access, curb big money in politics, and address corruption at the state capitol. If voters ultimately reject the constitutional convention in November, they won't have another chance to hold one for 20 more years. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, we just heard a report from our Karen DeWitt that the governor has added his name to the list of state politicians not wanting to hold a constitutional convention. Interestingly, Cuomo initially supported it, even including $1 million in the 2016 budget proposal, but the legislature failed to approve the money, and this year the governor didn't even include it in his plan.
Well, David, I think he, as you suggest, has been all over the place, you know, on this. He said that if the agenda was set before and if there were things he would go along with, he would be supportive. But the fact is that no such thing has happened. I have been all over the place also on this because I love the idea of a constitutional convention if it could come up with things like initiative and referendum, if it could come up with term limits. It's very unlikely that's going to happen. It is much more likely that what's going to happen here is that the same old guys who run the legislature and have run it into the ground with all of the stench of corruption and everything else will be running the Constitutional Convention, even though the leaders of both of those houses are really against it, and probably because they fear that there would be a runaway convention, that somehow this thing could end up really hurting them. And the labor unions, which have protections in the Constitution, are opposed to it. But the people seem to want it because it represents a potential for change. It has got to be approached in a nuanced kind of way, which is it could be a tremendous waste of money and probably will. On the other hand, it does offer some potential for change. If I thought for a second that we could have term limits and we could have initiative and referendum in this state, I would say it's well worth doing. But do I think that that's going to happen? Probably not, because, as I said before, the same old will be running the Constitutional Convention that have been all along running the legislature and running it in a way which people distinctly disapprove of.
New York State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie. This week, Allen announced a joint effort with Governor Cuomo to support the transition to full-day kindergarten in next year's budget for all school districts in New York that still maintain half-day programs.
I think it's great. This is something that we know from the stats and everything else. You give a kid a kindergarten, the earlier you start them, the more likely they are to succeed. It is one of those things that while the governor is giving out tons of money for economic development programs that frankly don't work, you take your money and you use it in a most productive way possible. And to me, the biggies are education and health care. If you want to make it work, you give the schools what they need and get out of the way and stop with the nonsense that he started when he became governor and he started to push teachers around and the rest of it. That was a bad move on his part. He knew it, and he retreated as fast as he could in subsequent years. Nevertheless, most of the teachers I know will never forgive him for what he tried to do. And now he has a chance, and the legislature has a chance, to do what's right as opposed to what's political.
A New York Republican member of Congress, Elise Stefanik, Allen, says President Trump should avoid using Twitter to get his opinions and policies out to the public. You also spoke with Republican Congressman John Faso, who was a bit miffed about the president's relationship with the press.
He wasn't a bit miffed. He really let him have it. This is a golden opportunity for him to make a certain amount of hay with some of the people on the independent left who don't like him at all, and to get a little bit even with the president, I think. I mean, after all, he went along with the president. He knew that the health care revision was terribly thought of in his own district, and yet he did it. And they get outside his house, they get outside his office, they have called his office so many times, they tell me that the phone is not answered. They are really angry. He has energized his independent left group. So has Stefanik, which puts them both in real danger of losing in 2018. And so this is a golden opportunity to really give it to Trump on the jaw and say, we've been there with you on the health care thing, but you let us down. You called us mean after we voted with you. Now, is anybody surprised when he leaves them an opening, his war on the press, not to really let him have it? They did it, and I think they think it's extraordinarily productive for them.
New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman considers Secretary of State Rex Tillerson a central figure in his expanding investigation into whether ExxonMobil misled investors about climate change. He told the AP that he has the legal authority to depose Tillerson, Exxon's former CEO. The politically charged case pits an ambitious New York Democrat against the Texas energy giant and has divided attorneys general across the nation.
Yeah, that's amazing, David, because in addition to all of the federal investigators and this Mueller and the special counsels, now you've got Eric Schneiderman trying his best to use his investigative pulpit to be able to make some real hay. The problem for him is he doesn't have nearly the resources of the FBI and everybody else. And in fact, in recent days, a couple of his forays into indictments have been met with judicial resistance, let's put it that way.
Legislative Gazette Political Observer, Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Last week, we brought you the story about Utica area State Assemblyman Anthony Brindisi, a Democrat who announced a run for Congress, hoping to unseat Congresswoman Claudia Tenney of the 22nd House District. Speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas, Brindisi discussed the issues and his goals if elected.
This is something that I thought long and hard about with my wife, my family. We've been talking it over for a few months now. And really what we're seeing right now in Washington and here within the 22nd Congressional District, we're pretty unhappy about. We have a representative right now who is really not listening to the folks that she represents, not holding town halls, and really doing the opposite of what's in their best interest, whether it's voting for the health care bill in the House that would strip 23 million Americans of their health insurance, or just not paying attention to the jobs and economy of this 22nd district, which is something that's very important to all of us here.
What does getting the approval of Senator Chuck Schumer mean for your campaign?
Well, it's very important. I think Senator Schumer is someone who has fought hard for the district I currently represent, the Utica-Rome area. You know, when the Defense Finance and Accounting Service in Rome, which is a major employer of about 1,000 people, was under threat of being moved, Senator Schumer stepped in. He's been a constant fighter protecting the Air Force Research Laboratory in Rome, which is another major employer. He's been there and very happy to have his endorsement. But the most important endorsement I'm looking for is that of the people that reside in this district. They are the ones who I'm looking for support from, and I'm going to work hard to try and be their next representative.
It's been reported you say you'll focus on fighting for the middle class.
Fighting for the middle class has always been a hallmark of what I've tried to do, whether it's working to lower the tax rate in New York State for middle-class families, trying to put jobs and training programs in place in our high schools so students coming out of high school and into college will have a place in the middle class, fighting for our seniors and veterans and those who don't have powerful lobbyists in Albany. I want to take what I've done in Albany, working in a bipartisan manner with my colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle, and bring that to Washington, where I think it's lacking right now. We need people who are fighters, who are not afraid to stand up to their own party, which is something I've shown during my time in the Assembly and something that I'm going to do in Washington. I'm certainly an independent voice.
You mentioned Claudia Tenney failing to hold town halls. Where else is she falling short?
The most important job of a representative is to listen to their constituents first. That's why one of the things that I have pledged I will do if elected is I will be holding a town hall in every county in the 22nd Congressional District every year that I'm in office. I don't know how anyone could be an effective representative if they're not hearing the concerns of the people they represent. So we need a member of Congress who is there and is fighting for the people in the district, and we're just lacking that right now because Congresswoman Tenney seems to be more interested in rubbing elbows with the D.C. power brokers than listening to the constituents back home.
What about the Patrick Madden factor, the grassroots candidate who's thrown his hat in the ring and will run against Claudia Tenney as a Democrat?
Well, as a scientist, I have talked to Patrick on a few occasions. I know one of his main concerns is cybersecurity and some of the hacking that took place during the election. Cybersecurity is a major interest of mine as well, representing the Rome area right now, which is home to the Air Force Research Laboratory, which is the major cybersecurity center for the Air Force. I think there's a lot more we can be doing to build up our cybersecurity defenses. And it's really a wise investment for the country to be making because, at least for us here locally in the Mohawk Valley, the research lab and other defense contractors are major employers for our region, providing an economic benefit, but they're also providing a vital national security interest for the rest of our country by keeping us safe on the home front.
What are some of your plans going forward?
Well, first and foremost, now that I've announced, my plan is to really start traveling around the district, holding meetings with folks from the counties that I currently do not represent. They need to get to know me and my record, and I want to get to know them and what their concerns are. Not every county is the same in New York State, and we all have unique characteristics, and I want to learn more about what the needs are of the other parts of the 22nd Congressional District and how I think I can best represent the folks there moving forward.
That was the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas speaking with State Assemblyman Anthony Brindisi, a Democrat running for Congress in New York's 22nd House District. We've reached out to GOP Representative Claudia Tenney to be interviewed for our program. It's been over a week for ride-hailing services now working in New York outside of the Big Apple. In the Hudson Valley, Westchester County lawmakers plan to monitor their concerns via a task force after the county and ride-hailing companies announced a program to create a voluntary pool of fingerprinted drivers. Meanwhile, further north, Kingston's mayor says so far, so good. We get the latest from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
With the launch of ride-hailing services June 29th, Uber's first New York City suburban customer was in Westchester County. An Uber spokeswoman says that trip was 1.8 miles, lasted 6.5 minutes, and took the rider from the Port Chester train station to a hotel. And in the days leading up to the state's ride-hailing launch, Republican Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino was in talks with Uber and Lyft executives, trying to address what he calls a major flaw in state law, that is, not requiring ride-hailing service drivers outside of New York City to be fingerprinted. Astorino then announced a voluntary program.
The program is called Thumbs Up, and participating drivers can volunteer to have their fingerprint on record with our law enforcement. And if it shows no criminal record, then clearly they will be passing that test. They will have the highest standard. And we will issue a decal that will go on their car, basically giving the thumbs up that they have been fingerprinted.
Drivers can go to the county's Taxi and Limousine Commission to be fingerprinted for $90. And within 48 to 72 hours, the results will be returned and entered into a database of fingerprinted drivers. Astorino says that starting in August, drivers can go to MorphoTrust, a state-authorized fingerprinting service, and have a report run for $102. The county will receive a $15 administration fee for each fingerprint check it administers.
It is a first of its kind in the nation. It is something that we believe will hopefully catch on. We also hope that this will spark a conversation around the state and ultimately will lead to the state amending the law again that would permit and require fingerprinting across the state.
Democratic County Board of Legislators Chairman Michael Kaplowitz, who stood alongside Astorino for the June 27th announcement, says he appreciates the county executive's compromise to create a pool of properly vetted ride-hailing drivers in Westchester County.
And the legislature will continue to hold out the option to opt out at a later date if Uber and Lyft at any time do not operate in good faith or fail to make public safety their priority.
Board of Legislators Democratic Majority Leader Catherine Borgia commended the fingerprinting plan, but criticized what she called a backroom decision. Lyft and Uber executives said they will encourage their drivers in Westchester to participate in the program. Josh Gold is Uber's New York Public Policy Director.
And we feel this is a good compromise that balances the needs of the legislature and the county executive with the requirements of the state law.
He says Uber will continue conversations with county officials on how to best improve transportation options. And some of those discussions will take place as part of a county legislative task force. Borgia says Democrats on the county's Board of Legislators will take the lead in coordinating discussion and plans of action on the continuing public safety and economic issues of allowing ride-hailing in Westchester County. Meanwhile, Kingston Mayor Steve Noble anticipates a lot of ride-hailing use in his city. Noble used Uber the first day it was available in Kingston. Noble says he had met his driver a few months earlier at a tech meeting.
I didn't recognize him until he pulled up, and And he said, Mayor Noble, is that you? And he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm actually here to get picked up. And he's like, no way, you're my first ride. And so it was a very small world. And the person was actually a videographer and teaches video production and wanted something to help fill in during the summer. And so that's the type of job creation that I think is really exciting for Kingston.
During his comments, Noble opened a ride-hailing app.
I just opened one just right now on my phone, and someone said they could be here within 7 minutes.
He says that bodes well for a Monday around noon.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A company based in the Capital Region of New York has been awarded a $9.1 million federal contract to develop a new generation of living building materials. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard explains.
Ecovative Design in Green Island, just north of Albany, has a unique approach. Instead of manufacturing products, from lampshades to packing materials, they grow them. Using agricultural waste and a special kind of fungus, Ecovative has been able to develop a variety of products since it was founded a decade ago. What started as a partnership between two RPI grads has grown into a business that employs more than 60 people. Ecovative product specialist Kyle Buckland shows off a bag of what will become the company's signature material.
This is what the raw material looks like. It looks like mulch. But it's actually corn and hemp mixed together. And then inside of here, you can't really see it, but that's the mycelium is actually in there in a dormant-like state.
Think of mycelium as the roots of a mushroom. With some water and a little flour, the fungus can be activated and grown to hold the material together in any shape. Bucklin also shows off a new packaging product being developed.
So this is a new prototype packaging part. We designed it to be a breakaway part, so everything is grown in one piece, and then once it comes to the customer, they can break it off.
To me, it looks like a big chocolate bar.
I like to call it Kit Kat packaging, but no one else does.
Ecovative just received a $9.1 million contract from the U.S. Department of Defense to create new living building materials. Ecovative Chief Scientist Gavin McIntyre says they're aiming to scale up production on a mycelium-based building material that would have the ability to self-repair.
If there were an issue, say, a leak within your roof, this material could react to that leak and self-repair such that you no longer have to worry about that hole in your roof because the material has responded to it naturally.
The product would be different from the Kit Kat packaging in that it would continue to grow once it is installed. Ecovative imagines a future where U.S. forces might be able to arrive at a conflict zone or disaster site and be able to actually grow their own building materials. They might even be able to grow the furniture within the building.
We're seeing a tremendous amount of effort and embodied energy going into the construction of facilities on site. We're hoping to be able to enable them to grow materials using local resources, just like we do here today at Ecovative.
You can see photos of some of Ecovative's products at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1727. Or just listen on the web at WAMC.org or podcast at WAMCpodcast.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.